Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. When voters in New York go to the polls this November, on the ballot will be a referendum about whether or not to hold a state constitutional convention. With me today are two guests with contrasting views. In favor of a constitutional convention is Hank DeLay. His previous positions in academia and government include Director of State Operations and Policy Management for Governor Mario Cuomo. Against having a convention is John Mannion, president of the West Genesee Teachers Association and a science teacher in the West Genesee school system. Hank, John, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you.
Thank you, Grant.
Now, let me start by laying out the basics of this situation as I understand them, and then I'll ask to see if either one of you want to correct me on something that I've said. And I'm going to make this as brief as possible, and please only correct me on specific things that I have wrong, because we'll explore the implications and the arguments surrounding these things as we go forward. But here is what voters are confronting. Every 20 years, voters in this state are asked whether the state should hold a constitutional convention. A convention was last considered by the voters and voted down in 1997. The question is now on the ballot again this November. If the voters approve a constitutional convention, then delegates to that convention will be selected in 2018 by a popular vote within each Senate district, as well as some statewide delegates. And the convention itself will be held in the spring of 2019. Anyone can run to be a delegate. Once at the convention, those delegates would have free rein to redesign the state constitution in any fashion pretty much they wanted, but of course they'd have to get agreement to those changes. And then the new constitution would go to the voters for approval. Now, the Constitution was last changed through this process in 1938. A convention was held in 1967, but the recommended Constitution failed at the ballot box. So in this iteration, proponents of a convention have pointed to the possibility of making reforms to the state's political system that have eluded the normal political process, like campaign finance rules, term limits, and more autonomy for local governments. There have also been arguments to enshrine certain things as rights in the state constitution, like abortion and equity and education financing. Opponents have pointed to the political uncertainty and danger that opening everything up for grabs entails, and many of the state's prominent elected officials are against having a convention, as well as the largest unions. So do I have that basically correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. With that long introduction, here's my first question, and Hank, I'm going to direct it to you initially. Obviously, there are different groups with pretty specific concerns and goals. I alluded to some that have taken positions on whether or not to have this convention, and they'll probably also mobilize to elect delegates if there is going to be a convention. So, Hank, my question to you is it possible for a voter to think about the merits of having a constitutional convention without taking the next mental step to think about and try to predict the specific kinds of changes that might come out of that constitutional convention? Should those two questions be separated? And if so, how can we do that?
Well, I think it's important for the voters to remember a couple of things. One, nothing can be done in a state constitutional convention which would in any way strip away rights that we have under the United States Constitution. Second, we've had a long history of constitutional conventions in the state. We've had 9 of them. And the requirement to have this 20-year ballot has been in our constitutions ever since 1846. And the reason is that in the past, people felt it was important every generation to step back and take a look at how your government was performing and have the opportunity to make changes when those in power already, in all probability, wouldn't be interested in doing some things. And we've had a great record of progressive change over the course of 2 centuries.
John, do you have any response to that or other thoughts to add on this question?
I have a couple comments on it. I would say, first of all, pertaining to your question, is that looking at whether we should open it up and what changes may occur as a result of it opening up, those two questions must be tied together. And I believe that any voter would say, would have to look at it and go, I have to be careful about voting yes for this because once it is open, we're not sure where this would go. In response to Hank's comment about the protections under the United States Constitution, this is not, obviously, I would like to consider myself a representative of an interest group, not a special interest group, but from one standpoint, the New York State Constitution does have retirement security protections for public employees, and when changes had occurred at the state level in other states recently, in Rhode Island and Alaska, that was brought to the federal courts to say, we believe that this is in violation, and the New York or the U.S. Constitution protects us. And those court cases, you know, they lost those court cases. So as far as that argument goes, I would say we need to be very careful about the changes that would occur within our own Constitution in this state.
So I had planned to get into that particular topic later, but you've introduced it, and I imagine, Hank, you've got something you want to say about that particular issue. Maybe we should just talk about this now before I get to my next question. Go ahead, Hank.
Well, the public employee unions have focused on the pension provisions in the state constitution. First, it's important to know that they came into our constitution as a result of the 1938 Constitutional Convention. The legislature didn't do it. The convention did. Second, they used very important language in drafting it, and they said that these relationships were contractual. And that's very different from Wisconsin. That's very different from many other states. And what it does do, and this has been supported in the courts, is it protects the incumbent pensioners and the incumbent employees from having their pensions in any way reduced. The contract clause of the United States Constitution is what prevents that from happening. And going forward, of course, new entrants into public employment can have different circumstances in their pension systems than older ones. And we've seen this. We're in tier six right now in the employees' retirement system.
I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with John Mannion and Hank DeLay about the November referendum regarding a constitutional convention. Let me pivot off of that issue to flip it around in a way and say it and get either of you to comment on this. It seems to me that what's missing so far, perhaps outside of this pension issue that you brought up for public employees, it seems to me that what's missing so far in the public discussion, to the degree that it has existed on this issue, is one big thing that the pro-convention advocates are coalescing around. Maybe, Hank, this is more a question for you. And such as, let me give an example, let's have a constitutional convention in order to establish a unicameral legislature. There are some reformers that think that would be a good idea, would like to say that. It seems to me that there's something that's missing so far in terms of what we are doing with this. So do you think as we get closer, we'll see something like that emerge, that the pro-convention people are going to coalesce around?
Well, I think the pro folks are of many minds in terms of different policy priorities that they have. Certainly the concern about corruption at the state level is an overarching one. We've had over 40 members of the legislature in the last two decades who have either been indicted, convicted, sent to prison, and so forth. And that goes across both parties. We've had the leaders of the Senate, both Republican and Democrat, convicted of crimes. The Speaker of the Assembly, the State Comptroller, all convicted of serious crimes. It's a real issue. And the legislature has failed to enact adequate public ethics controls. And right now we have a 14-member Joint Commission on Public Ethics, where any two of the 14 can block an investigation of a person from the same political party. It's absurd.
John, do you want to comment on that?
My response to Hank would be that when you go to your voting location in November and you turn the ballot over and you see the proposition, the referendum that says, shall we have an amendment in the New York State Constitution? You also see right near that another referendum that says, shall we remove pensions from convicted felons of elected officials?
Right.
And that is another referendum that was placed on that ballot outside of the Constitutional Convention process. So what we're seeing here is a change that can occur to the New York State Constitution that does deal with ethics, that is outside of the process of opening up the entire Constitution and therefore allowing, you know, virtually any change to be made.
And if we go ahead, if I can just follow up on that,
it's important to note that the public employee unions were opposed to that move for many years. And it was only after Dean Skelos and Shelley Silver were both convicted. Here they were, the sitting leaders of the two houses of the legislature, that finally the public was so upset that it forced the legislature to take that action. It wasn't because the public employee unions had for years been saying, you know, this is something that's really good. They were saying this is a slippery slope and it's going to affect us next and we don't want you to do it.
Well, let me broaden it beyond the public employee's position on that and follow up on this and put the question to you, Hank, this way, that following up on what John said is, wouldn't it make this a pretty – it's going to be a pretty heavy lift. If I am a reformer and I want to see this done and this done, to start with the Constitutional Convention and go through that process and then get that convention – get that Constitution approved by the voters, just thinking of this as a political analyst, that seems like a low-percentage, heavy lift kind of enterprise. Wouldn't it be better if that was the goal, to focus on electing – people who were running on that platform of whichever party that were dedicated to making those changes, or to use these other sort of constitutional amendment or referendum approaches? Why take this really difficult path to get there?
Because as the folks from the Citizens Union and the League of Women Voters would say, we've been trying that for the 20 to 30 years. It hasn't happened. And as long as the members of the legislature are overwhelmingly reelected, because they shape their own districts, they choose their voters rather than the voters choosing them, this is going to continue. The pay-to-play system, the culture in Albany, which the unions, which the business people, all of the political elites participate in, they say, you know, the system isn't that good, but we know how to manipulate it.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm speaking with Hank DeLay and John Mannion. We're discussing whether voters this November should support holding a constitutional convention. John, I want to build off of the things that Hank said in response to my question before the break and ask you, okay, not just as a union member, okay, not just as a public employee, but as a citizen, what are you most concerned about losing or seeing created if this process is opened up?
Absolutely. Well, I would say that my main concern has to do with education. As a parent of three children that are in the public education system that has served them very well, and as an employee in one of those systems that has seen the public education system work, I would say that to see what has happened in some other states, changes that have occurred within state constitutions. In New York State, children are entitled to a free public education. And what we've seen in places like Michigan, where there are for-profit charter schools that, in my opinion, do not provide the same level of education for these kids, and also they do not they don't have the oversight that public schools have. I also enjoy the Adirondacks, and there are great protections within the New York State Constitution to make sure that that land is preserved, and when used, to be used prudently. There are protections there that I would like to see not changed. And just to, you know, sort of close this comment, I would say that it might be true that the ethics changes that we've seen in New York State have not occurred. But if this constitutional convention is held, the individuals that will serve as delegates will more than likely be these either locally elected officials or people that are currently within the state legislature.
We'll get to that next, but let me see, Hank, do you have a response to that? He says there's a lot here that's at risk, and he's not trusting the process to protect these things.
Well, first, again, I just mentioned that the Forever Wild provision that John has just referred to is the product of the 1894 Constitutional Convention. Again, path-breaking progress. That's been the history of our constitutional conventions. Second, on the education side, we operate with a constitutional provision that refers to a system of free common schools in which all of the children of the state can attend. Now, that is language which might have been significant in 1894. It's not what we need for the 21st century. And I think it's very sad, frankly, that the teachers' union in particular has failed to come forward with, how can we amend this to go forward? Why aren't we including a provision that talks about equality of educational opportunity? We have the second worst spread between poor and wealthy districts of all the states in the country. Only Illinois is worse than New York. This is a really serious issue. It needs reform. It doesn't include preparation for higher education. The Court of Appeals decision, when it talked about sound basic education, made it very clear that was only education to enter the workforce. We need to bring it into the 21st century.
In case you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, and my guests are John Mannion and Hank DeLay. All right, so, John, you brought this up earlier. I want to come back to it now. The actual process of holding a constitutional convention, who's going to be there and how it's going to work. So, John, I'll stick with you. You brought this up as a worry. All right, so you think that the delegates are likely to be then elected officials, if I got you correct.
I do, yes.
Okay. Hank, do you have a different view of who these delegates are likely to be?
Well, I think it's going to be pretty complex. You know, in 1967, only 13 of the 186 delegates were state legislators. That's 7%. We had a significant number of judges. We had mayors. We had mayors of Rochester. We had the mayor here in Syracuse. That combination was a very significant one. But the opponents of the Constitutional Convention can't seem to get agreement on who these people are. On the one hand, they scare the voters by saying, you know, they're all going to be these crazies who are going to tear apart our Constitution, even though we have overwhelming support in New York for education, for Forever Wild, and so on. Nothing's happening in the legislature to take those away. And then they say, oh, if you don't like that argument, then it's going to be all the same people. And then it's a waste of money because you're just electing everybody who's already part of the political process.
The system is so rotten that we can't trust opening the process up to the rotten people to change it.
Well, those are your words, but what I would say is
putting a sharper edge on it, yes.
As Hank had mentioned, I do agree with the numbers that he provided about the percentage of the convention that involved state legislators. But those legislators, other legislators, also ran the convention. And as he listed, most of the other, I believe, somewhere between around four-fifths of the delegates were already elected officials.
Myself, of different kinds, then.
Of different kinds, of locally elected officials or judges. And, you know, this has been tagged as the People's Convention. But I'm one of those people, and my availability for 3 months or 6 months or longer, however long the costly convention would take, I'm not available.
Yeah, and let me jump in on yes. that because, Hank, I did want to ask you the question, and John's put it perfectly. I mean, how are average citizens going to compete for participation and inclusion in a constitutional convention process? Where will they get into it?
Well, they have to get into it in all probability by being nominated by one of the two major parties.
Okay.
And to do that, they have to follow the same rules that govern qualifications for a member of the Senate. That's a pretty wide open set right. of criteria, but that's what, you know, they have to do.
But it sounds to me, in all fairness, that that's a recipe for, you know, again, I'll use another, to put something in air quotes here, the usual suspects to be involved in these kinds of things.
Well, my experience in 1967, Grant, I would tell you, is that it is a phenomenally interesting experience to watch state legislators, judges, mayors, county executives, and teachers, social welfare workers, and so forth, all having equal
interaction.
They bring different perspectives to this process, which is very, very different from the folks who are year in and year out reelected to the state legislature. It's an opportunity to look once again with a fresh view. And that's what our earlier founders wanted to see.
So we only have a couple minutes left, but there was one other question about this I wanted to put to you. What is the voter on November 7th having to actually fill out this circle on the back of the ballot, yes or no, going to do with this, particularly in the current political climate? Let me just sketch out what I think is kind of the default view for the average voter. They're going to see this question. They're going to think, I don't trust politics right now. I don't trust the system. Probably don't trust Albany. I'm going to vote no. I mean, that's going to be the extent of the consideration. So, John, you probably would be okay with that as an outcome, but I'm assuming you would not like that to be the process that voters are going through. So how do we move voters off of that, if I'm right, about that kind of default view?
Sure. Well, I can only speak to my own experience, which is this summer I went and I knocked on doors. And as I knocked on doors, what I saw a lot of is, I hate to use this word, but ignorance about the Constitutional Convention, not having never heard of it before.
Well, and it's not getting a lot of play. So,
it's not. Yeah. So I actually think that possibly the opposite would occur, that people would look at it and say, you know, we need ethics reform, or we need, this Albany is broken. You hear that all the time.
This is
the way to change it. Well, you know, unfortunately, I would, in my opinion, and from what I have seen out there, and what I believe is going to happen, is that we're going to have those basically the same delegates. The delegates that will be in will be many of the elected officials.
Hank, you've got about 20 seconds here to make the final comment on this particular issue.
Well, there may be many public officials who are elected. I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily at all. Take a look at one issue, gerrymandering. 50 years ago in 1967, the proposed Constitution prohibited gerrymandering of any type. The legislature has had 50 years to put that out to the voters separately as a separate amendment. They haven't done it because it's incumbent protection.
That was John Mannion and Hank DeLay. Remember that voters will decide this issue on the November ballot, and Election Day is November 7th. John, Hank, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me.
A pleasure, Grant.
Thank you, Grant.
You've been listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media, Conversations in the Public Interest. To hear a continuation of the debate that you've been listening to, please go to WRVO.org to the Campbell Conversations page found under the Local Programming tab. Thanks again for listening.
The Campbell Conversations, Conversations in the Public Interest, was hosted and produced by Grant Reher, engineered by Tom Fazio, and edited by Jason Smith. The Campbell Conversations is a joint production of the Campbell Public Affairs Institute at Syracuse University and WRVO Public Media. To learn more about the program or to hear previous interviews, visit wrvo.org/Campbell Conversations.